we're still in 2023, but the listener will be, I think, 2 weeks into 2024.
Yeah, they'll be in full January misery.
Yes.
No end in sight zone at this stage.
They'll be halfway through dry Jan, won't they, some of them? It's quite a bleak time.
Do you know what I did last year, which I might do this year?
Yeah.
I left up my Christmas decorations until Candlemas.
When is Candlemas?
Early Feb.
Well, well.
Your Christmas tree must be an absolute fire hazard. It would have been a totally, just a tinder, a sort of dry, crackly.
What is that? Old... Sort of Welsh Orthodox tradition.
Well, A, I don't have a real Christmas tree. I have a plastic one, so it could stay up 365 if I wanted it to.
It can be Christmas every day, can't it?
It'll be 366 next year, the old sleep year. Next year slash this year, isn't it? Excitingly.
It'll outlive you, won't it? That's the promise made with those ones.
Well, it would literally take 10,000 years to decompose.
The promise is you'll die first with this plastic Christmas tree.
Although I think probably pretty flammable at all times.
Certainly noxious when in contact with fire.
Kick off some really, really nasty stuff.
Mm. And is it one of those ones that has the decorations are sort of moulded into it initially? So there's
So even that isn't an option.
Yeah. Exactly.
You just got to choose fairy or star from the get-go in the shop, straight out of the packet.
But because it's the full let's minimise the magic of Christmas thing, isn't it? It's Bonjo's. It's totally Bonjo. This. All the decorations are pre-installed, so there's no sense of there's no ritual of putting them on.
Yeah, there's even sort of fake decoy presents underneath it as well for when Bonjo doesn't bother to buy anyone a Christmas present.
That's right.
Looks like he has done.
That's right, and they're mounted. It's a kind of version of a lazy Susan at the bottom of the tree, isn't it? So that as soon as a nephew or a small child reaches one of the presents, it just spins just out of reach.
Yeah, exactly. <Doesn't it? laughs> And if they try and trick you, if they try and put a second nephew in place to catch it, then it does deploy a small electric shock. Yeah, I've seen
that.
That's
those. Right. Yeah. And it's absolutely 80% non-fatal guaranteed, isn't it? There's an 80% non-fatal guarantee. And obviously... Because a lot of that stuff is purchased from
North Korea.
It's Chinese Secret Service, but a lot of it has been gone via North Korea for being too cruel, and therefore has been circulated back onto the international circuit.
Because there's a button on it which has, to be fair to them, been disabled, which says feed an uncle to your dogs.
That's right, yeah.
And you can press that as much as you like and nothing will happen, sadly.
No, but it's turned it into a little tune, hasn't it? Feed your uncle to your dogs. Feed your uncle to your... Because it uses the jingle.
Well, it's to the tune of Joy to the World, isn't it? Feed your uncle to your dogs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of trees have a nice Christmassy smell, don't they? Which obviously Bonjo hates.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it creates a kind of warm atmosphere in a sense of Christmas.
Bonjamin only likes the smell of pine if a traitor is being chased through a pine woodland on a mountainside.
That's right, yeah.
And eventually gunned down.
Later fed to dogs.
Well, once they've digested various uncles, isn't it? Because the dogs are being fed with uncles, aren't they, round the clock?
They do get used to the taste of uncles, don't they, eventually? They can't. They will reject anything else. Even a great aunt, though, no thanks.
No, mate. Not good enough.
I'll hold out, cheers.
It has to be a blood uncle. But they'll, and they can trace them, can't they? They can hunt down an uncle for over 50 or 60 miles.
Once you give them the scent of an uncle.
Got the scent of an uncle. And you can give them any of the uncle accoutrements the uncle might have. For example, a pair of leather driving gloves, a copy of the Daily Telegraph.
Even a misjudged pun, they can get the scent of that.
Yeah, a misjudged pun. Yeah, that's enough. And they're off. Yeah, it's terrifying. So the tree, yeah, so you've got the, how do you describe it? It's midnight black, isn't it, the colour you...
With a chrome stand at the bottom.
Chrome stand. You went for midnight black, you could have gone for military green.
Also known as the same colour as a tree.
But that's not how it's marketed, though, is it?
It's marketed as military trees and military green, aren't they? Yeah, so you've gone for midnight black, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
Matte finish, there's no reflection on it. Hard metal chrome stand.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wanted to, because if a burglar does come, because burglars need Christmas presents too, everyone knows that. If a burglar does come and try and rob your tree, you want them to be able to impale themselves on that. You don't want that to be visible.
That's right.
As they're creeping through your living room, you want them to trip and impale, don't you?
They trip and impale, then the whole thing spins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And through centrifugal force, parts of their bodies then hewn away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're left just with a sort of spine essentially attached to the tree.
That's right. And then it's, who would have thought, coincidence? And now, 2 hours later, it's lunchtime.
It's bolognese.
It's burglar bolognese.
It's lumpy bolognese.
Bottle nails.
if there is a fingernail, that's because if there's a little fingernail floating in it, isn't it? You'll say, "Don't worry, nephew, it's bottle nails." But the nephew can't hear you because he's still crying, isn't he?
Well, because his dad was eaten by a dog. Yes, that was my Christmas, yeah.
And then when you're sick of Christmas, Ben, because which happens for you normally, doesn't it, about 1:45, you've had enough of the day.
Right.
You can press a button where the whole, because the whole tree is made out of a kind of intelligent plastic, isn't it? The whole thing sort of melts and turns into a kind of a sort of lethal black sort of steaming sort of magma liquid, doesn't it? And anyone looking at it is sort of dragged in.
Yeah.
Ingested into the tree somehow, it reforms. Mm-hmm. It's just you now. Yeah. You're on your own. You can choose what telly you want to watch.
Yeah, and it turns out the telly I want to watch is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which I watched over Christmas.
Is that the new one?
That's the new one.
Which I haven't seen yet.
So I was really ready for it to be total horseshit.
Surely it was, wasn't it?
Well, okay, if you don't want any spoilers, listeners, turn away now. The Dial of Destiny is a time machine.
Okay.
So when I heard this, I was like, I don't need
it. It's an absolutely classic shark jump move, isn't it? To introduce time travel quite
four
late
movies
into a franchise.
In. Yeah. 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 Of course, there were Nazis involved. I wasn't fully paying attention, really. I was kind of in a kind of, what's the word? Torpor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of came round at the end and he was fighting the Romans.
Oh.
Oh, come off. Are you serious? That's beyond shark, isn't it? That's not even a shark that anyone thought existed.
That's jumping the Sharknado, isn't it?
That is jumping the Sharknado.
And it wasn't just him. It was him and Fleabag fighting the Romans.
Just confounding them with funky bass.
Cross pan-dimensionalize and, like, become her character from Fleabag, did she, as well?
Yeah.
I can't believe I've just taken it up the arse from a Nazi, but at the same time, I feel good about myself, but also...
Hang on, you said Fleabag. I thought you said Flea. I was thinking Red Hot Chili Peppers. What did you say?
No, Fleabag.
She might play bass too, I don't know. You did say Fleabag, what? Didn't you?
Yes. Well, you were imagining Indiana Jones with a slap bass gun.
Yeah. Probably Indiana on point with the weapons. Flea just tightly behind him, watching his six, letting him bow, 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 coming in from the left. 2 o'clock.
Would he have a rare and ancient historical pharaoh's sock over his willy? That's all he's wearing. Indiana Jones has to pull it off, and it's a sort of bit of a
golden
moment.
Yeah, be a golden pharaoh's sock with a sort of snake's head.
Yeah, that willy sock belongs in a museum. And he has to yank it off. And then when he yanks it off, obviously it sets off various arrows and stuff that come out of the other bandmen's
weird,
nipples.
Yeah, ancient Egyptian angels and Uraei are spilled forth and consume the heads of the centurions. Yeah,
exactly. So I thought you meant Fleabag, so that she, like, occasionally her character would look to the camera and be like...
Say something
this,
right.
This Nazi's certainly keen on historical baubles. But I wouldn't mind having it up the arse from him, though. I feel wrong saying that.
Oh,
that sort of thing. Is that fair?
I think that's a good.
Is that usable?
Well,
but that's what they said when they were talking about the Fleabag scripts. Ben, is this usable? And they had the guts to do it. Yeah? Change the face of television. So, who do you want to be in this situation? Yeah.
That's interesting. It's not going to stop me watching it. I don't know when I'm going to watch it, but I will. I mean, I can guarantee, I know myself too well that I will watch it.
Yeah, so I'm going to say that actually, I sort of really enjoyed it, actually.
Oh, God. The trouble with this, Ben, is that you've put yourself in a sort of double bluff naysay headlock with this film.
Right, okay.
Because we've talked about you being a naysayer, haven't we? Have we?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, that's the thing.
You love slaying a sacred cow, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of a film which has generally been slagged off,
yeah,
as a natural naysayer, it's a sort of double negative thing for you, and you tend to walk swing the other way. Then
it's time to yaysay.
You end up being a yaysayer. For me, Dial of Destiny is such a rubbish title. It's so pathetic. It feels like Dial of Destiny is something that I'll be going through my old stuff in my parents' house, and I'll find something written in felt tip, and it'll be Dial of Destiny, and the A's the wrong way around. And it's like a stupid idea I had when I was four. Oh, look, it's my Dial of Destiny.
That was stolen by a Hollywood studio.
Yeah, this is sounding a bit of a rum claim now.
So, I'm just laying.
Planting the seed.
I'm laying the seeds for
a major
seeds.
Piece of litigation. Yeah, apparently Henry, he's representing himself.
Is he?
Yeah, against Sony or whoever it is.
He's also claiming that he came up with Fleabag as a boy.
Heavy again, he found it in a box of old stuff. When, next to his Playmobil toys, there was a detailed layout. You know.
He also claims to have written the album Blood Sugar Sex Magic by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I think he thought of the penis sock as an idea and should be getting royalties for anyone wearing a penis sock.
So, fighting Romans.
Yeah.
Do they limit it to just that? What is it, World War II and Roman Empire? It's a very British primary school level of history, isn't it? I mean, it's basically 1066, maybe. Tudors, there are other options, right?
And also, it's the world of time travel where you always end up in the middle of a... You know, if you go back in time, you're in 1066, you're at the Battle of Hastings, you're on the battlefield.
Yeah, you're in Cleopatra's bath.
You're in the... Exactly. You appear at the most... Important, recognized.
Well, that's what happens. It's the moment when I think Rome is invading Syracuse or somewhere like that in the Mediterranean. Yeah. And it's
Syracuse, New York.
It's a big battle anyway that they turn up for.
Yeah, of course.
And not to give in, well, this would give something away. Indiana Jones wants to stay back then.
Does he?
You know, he's an archaeologist. He's spent his whole life studying this period.
So he wants to stay in the period itself.
Yeah, so he meets Archimedes, the great Archimedes.
Of course he does. Well, in his bath. Is he the one that jumped out of the bath?
Yeah, yeah. He jumped in the bath, then jumped out of the bath. Yeah.
Yeah, although thinking about it, isn't he Greek?
He is Greek. He was Greek.
Is he contemporaneous with the Romans? Maybe I didn't understand what I was watching.
Oh, maybe. But also, I'd have thought, generally speaking, with a movie like that, the idea is to not worry about it too much, right?
I think so. But what I don't want to do is paint this film
with...
Stop
asking silly questions. You'll be contemporaneous with my fist, Dr. Joyce. Isn't it?
I don't want to paint this movie as being dumb when actually it's me that's being dumb.
It's the idea that the ultimate goal of any archaeologist is to literally be back in the period where you're researching. Is that the kind of assumption? I'm here now, so I can stop digging. I can finally put down my little trowel and stop digging.
But wouldn't you be a bit disappointed? It's not quite far back enough, isn't it, for Indiana? Like, one of the most sort of well-documented bits of... You want to go a bit further back, don't you? You want to go to a bit of mystery, don't you? Your sort of hidden Turkish city or something that no one's ever quite been able to find.
Mm. Right, so I've looked it up. He goes to the Siege of Syracuse.
Okay.
Which is when the Roman Republic... sieged the Hellenistic city of Syracuse.
Yeah, 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 we know that. Yeah.
Boring! Catch up, mate. obviously, yeah.
Yeah, catch up in your own time, Ben, come on.
I mean, I'd have called it Hellenic, but Hellenistic, minor point, there's no point getting into it now. Yes.
Anyway, Archimedes, this is the true story, was slain by a Roman soldier.
Of course he was, killed. Yeah, Roman. Who else do you think slew him?
Sloan.
yeah, so get to the new bit. Yeah, he's slain by... Yeah, go on then. The bit we don't know, so then what? Yeah, he was killed by a Roman soldier, we know that. Yes, then? What happened next?
Well, in the film, then he met Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember. I don't remember that bit.
Okay.
Right, okay, so so does Indiana Jones try and save his life before he can get out of the bath and calculate what volume means? Is that what it is? No. Or he works out that humans are more dense than water, does he?
He works out water displacement.
He works out the volume of a human will be displaced in a bath.
Okay.
He's basically the original stand-up comic, right? Observational comic, because everyone has noticed that the water goes up. But just no one had noticed. Do you know what I mean? He noticed.
Yeah, you're right. And that's what's so great about Archimedes.
He put it into words. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds rubbish.
I don't know.
I can't wait to see it.
Wait. It's funny. The weird thing about a lot of films I find is that you don't know how good they are at the time. Quite often, there's films where everyone thinks they're brilliant. You just go, this is brilliant. And then it takes about 5 years, I reckon, to know what a film's actually like. You watch it and there's so much information you're swept up in. Either the high expectations, because everyone's saying it's great, or the low expectations, everyone's saying it's terrible. It takes about 5 years to then go, yo, you know what, that was a... And often it's...
Often they've won an Oscar.
Often they've won an Oscar, and then you realise that was a terrible film that everyone has realised subsequently.
Birdman.
Well, I quite liked Birdman. but I can see what you mean. I mean, yeah.
But you're never going to watch it ever again.
I'm going to stand by... No, of course not. Are you mad? Not when I could stare at a wall for 2 hours.
Whereas Die Hard, you're watching every year, right?
Die Hard is definitely a brilliant film.
I saw Die Hard in the cinema this year as part of a festive screening.
Oh, brilliant. Nice.
It was terrific.
There are films where you watch it and you think it's terrible, and actually 5 years later you go, that's actually a good film. I think that can happen as well.
When you say it like that, it sounds completely credible.
Yes.
I'm struggling to think of an example. Maybe there is one.
What, where it was bad and then you realise it was good?
But you're also quite good at saying things.
I know.
That wrap them up and it sounds, oh, yeah, absolutely right. And then you sort of, and a bit later you think, hang on, was that?
It's because of my RP voice.
Was that total bollocks?
It's because of my sweet, seductive RP voice.
You'd be such a good Home Secretary.
Such a good Home Secretary.
So slippery.
For so many ways.
The slipperiest exactly. yet.
Yeah. But don't you see, it's so simple. We invade France from the south. It's never been done, and that's why it'll probably work. That's right, from the south. God, it's very credible, Henry South theory. Yeah, it is. It's just, it's the voice of credibility. But it's increasingly the voice of getting absolutely eviscerated in a tribunal.
Isn't it? Think about it, guys. The beaches of the north of England are filled with donkeys. If we can take all those donkeys to the south coast of France...
We would flood their donkey economy, completely crippling the south of France, certainly from a donkey perspective. Yeah, we'd control the donkeys. And what is it they say about social media?
It starts with the Marseillaise donkeys.
It starts with the Marseillaise donkeys.
Take away a country's donkeys, you take its soul.
We've all lost our keys and it's a bit of a nightmare. But imagine if an entire country lost its Don keys. It just sounds quite credible, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Let's turn on that bean machine. Okay, this week's topic as sent in by Holly from Portsmouth.
Holly from me old hometown of Portsmouth.
Indeed.
Mike's old stomping ground.
Yeah. Nice.
Back from your Navy days?
Yep.
Shore leave.
Back with a fleet. Yeah.
Is castles.
A very Portsmouth choice, I'd say.
Here's a castle, the Tower of London.
Ooh.
And here's a fact. Ooh. I've never been.
Have you not?
It's really fucking great.
Is it?
Worth
I've
it.
Never been to Tower.
I went a few years ago.
I would say it's maybe London's best thing to visit.
Wow, I've never.
It's really good. I might have gone just pre-COVID, I think, is when I was last there.
Last there? So you've been there several times?
I've been there in my life probably 3 times,
wow,
I think.
I've never been. So what happens?
Well, it depends what you're into. That's the thing. Do you know what I mean? You could be into...
Is it something for everyone?
Well, are you into the crown jewels?
All stand for the king!
We're entering the regal zone. Regal zone. Regal zone.
Off with their heads.
On with the show.
Listen not to the knaves and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The regal zone. Regal zone.
Are you into tales of executioners and imprisonment and torture? Are you into the ravens? Are you into weird men called beef eaters who genuinely live there?
You've literally topped my 4 favourite things. Yeah, I love yeah. all of those things.
There's almost certainly a granary-style cafeteria if you're peckish.
So there is something for everyone.
Are you into loads of Spanish teenagers wearing their backpacks on the front?
That's my 5th favourite thing. I'm not even joking. That is my 5th favourite. There is something for absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
For me, I like the execution element. There's a lot of... this is the room where Anne Boleyn spent her final night before being beheaded and all that kind of stuff. I like that.
Princes in the Tower chat?
Yeah.
There must be some good.
I'm big into the Ravens myself. That's my thing.
So the Ravens, just for anyone who doesn't know, is an a cappella group, isn't it? they work out of the Tower.
They were college buddies.
Yeah.
They went to Magdalen College in Oxford.
Yeah.
And they're slightly cheeky, aren't they? So there's a lot of... don't look at me crown jewels, but
exactly. They didn't manage to quite crack into the sort of the wedding circuit, but they had, through a family connection, they were able to get the Tower of London gig.
Yeah. And they do a lovely thing.
They've got their little tune in at the beginning.
Execution, no going back, isn't it? And they do a thing where they, because there's a kabuki element, isn't there? Because they're all dressed in black and their heads bop up and down. They do a thing where it looks like one of their heads has come off and is spinning down the other end.
Yeah.
And they make it look like they've pretended to do it. And then by the time they actually have, and it falls out the window. Isn't it?
Yeah, those guys are amazing.
So the Ravens, are there just lots of Ravens there, genuinely? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a very set number, maybe seven or something. They're officially on the payroll as guards.
And isn't there some sort of myth that if the Ravens ever leave the Tower, England will burn?
Indeed. England will be lost. England will burn and tip into the sea. But they're amazing. They're the size of a small dog, these
things. They are. They're good.
Wow. Which And if that was a dog you were saying was that size, that wouldn't be impressive, would it?
It was not impressive at all. This dog is
unless it was a big dog.
If it could fly.
Well, if it was a dog that's supposed to be big but wasn't big.
If there was a big dog, that was the size of a small dog, that would be impressive.
And then was beaked and winged.
Or if there was a tiny dog that was the size of a small dog, it'd be quite impressive. but for a raven to be the size of a small dog is incredible. It's just a shame there's a word small in there, isn't it?
Because even dare I say small to medium. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, so raven size.
Push it up the ante a bit if you like.
Ideally, you'd find an animal where you don't have to say small. So, like could you say the raven's the size of a fully grown pig?
That's much bigger than a dog.
The ravens, they're the size of an impossibly genetically engineered toad.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that does picture it.
Cannot survive beyond a day.
Kill me.
I hope this gribbet will be my last.
Why did you do this?
What have you proved? I'm a vanity project, nothing more. A vanity project for the soul. I am grotesque. I'm basically just a big breathing wart.
Who can speak English? Why?
Who can speak English? Hang on a minute. I'm a wonder of science. I'm amazing. Don't kill me now. It's too late.
So hang on a second. These ravens.
Yeah.
Are they caged?
No, sir. They're loose. About the hoose.
So why didn't they just go away? But how do you know those are the right ravens? I mean,
because they respect the crown.
They respect the crown, or someone's done something to their wings. I suspect.
Or it's like in that Arnold Schwarzenegger film, The Running Man, where they've got a chip in their heads where if they try and fly beyond the perimeter, they explode.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the things about visiting the towers. You will see two or three ravens explode in perimeter during.
And if you're lucky, a beef eater.
Yeah.
Exactly. Those guys.
They're also traps, aren't they?
They know the deal, but they just go spare. They just have to try.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So I've been there, I think, twice. It's really good. I can't remember what the crown jewels are like. I don't remember that bit at all. But they are there, right?
They are there. I think it depends whether or not you're whelmed by jewels and gems and precious stones. I mean, I for one, am not.
Look upon my brightness, child. Lose yourself in my brightness.
I can't go in there, darling. I can't go in. The jewels are too seductive to me. You know what happens when I see an orb? Don't let me see the orb.
I imagine that the Tower of London is full of, you know, those ancient British laws where you can actually still get executed for if you do piracy in the high seas or lead a sheep across Vauxhall Bridge,
or if you don't bin your yogurt properly in the cafeteria. I think they can do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you don't let the beef eaters lick your yogurt pot clean before you put it in the recycling bin,
you can actually be executed as part of the same visit. Well, the crown jewels. The one thing I've heard about the crown jewels is that they're replicas.
Oh.
I think they're replicas, mate.
You think they're decoys? So that sounds like a conspiracy theory. Where are the real ones?
I think, ironically, the real ones are the place you'd least expect.
They're in Mexico City because we secretly were invaded by Mexico 60 years ago.
It's a branch of JD Sports in Mexico City.
And it's hiding in plain sight. There's a floor called the Crown Jewels floor.
So is that true, Henry, that they're not the real ones?
I think they're not the real ones. And I think the real ones are actually hidden, the place you'd least expect, in fact, after Mexico City, which is
within the fake ones themselves.
Oh, hang on. Yes, is it? I don't know. No one would ever.
So they'll have the real crown jewels if they steal them, but they won't know that they're not actually looking at the real ones, because the real ones will be buried within them under their very noses.
Oh, God, we shouldn't have let the ravens come up with this idea. I told you the ravens were getting too powerful. They're not even that good at a cappella, to be honest.
So, Mike, you've been there three times.
So, I think so, probably.
Is the jewel in the crown the jewel in the crown?
It wasn't for me.
What was the best bit? The ravens?
Raven, for me, the ravens, but that's not going to be the same for someone else.
Looking out of the window at some birds?
No, because they're very tame, so you get up quite close to them, and they're impressively... The first time you see them, they're just... They take you by surprise by how big they are.
Are they surprisingly tall and human-shaped and have the slight energy and body language and voice patterns of an out-of-work actor?
Yes, and do you know that... They do sometimes talk about how they are going to be doing a fringe show of Macbeth in Space later that month at the Finsbury, and there are still tickets. They do say that's what their squawk sounds like.
I'm getting slight vibes of that. Have you ever been to an exhibition or a place where there's a person who's going, "Howdy, partner, welcome, I'm Stevie Jack Stevies."
Yeah. And you're making me feel tired all over just by even talking about it.
Yeah. I'm going to be showing you around the OK Corral today.
There's a place near me that does that called Llancaich Fawr, which is like a Tudor manor house.
Yeah.
And when you go, someone goes, "And how did you get here?" And you go, "Oh, we came in the car." And they go, "What is a car?"
And you're like, "Cork it, you fucking prick. We're all just trying to get through this day." Yeah. I'm going to pretend to read the blurbs and I'm going to buy a bloody coffee in the cafe and go home, all right?
You're terrifying the children. Yeah. And the adults just want you to go away.
Yeah.
"What is this car? Some kind of iron horse? A wheeled horse?" It's all that business.
"A carriage of no horse drawn?"
The museum closed half an hour ago and we're in the car park. Wait, just leave it out. Just stop it. Oh my leave God. Me alone.
"We're in a TGI Fridays. We thought we'd left you behind."
I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the agony of the direct experience of that makes me feel more tired, or imagining that guy when he gets back to his flat that night.
"What is this, some sort of small apartment I live in with her?"
When he finally takes off his Tudor hat, that long, long, deep sigh.
"What is this? You call it tagliatelle? Oh, shut up, Ryan, please. Just eat your pasta."
"I funded you 4 years through the conservatoire for this."
"I will not eat this Italian papist muck."
"I see you have brought spices from the far side of the Indus."
"It's black pepper."
"Black pepper."
"Some sort of mechanical water spewing beast. It's the toilet. Just have your nightly dump so we can go to bed. I can just have 8 hours of relief from this absolute hell that I live in with you." Although, that'd be quite a good film, wouldn't it? If you were actually a king from the old days, you'd be transported to the future. Everyone just thought you were an actor. Working out.
That's a great film.
A good film, isn't it? It's the only place to hide, right?
It's the only place to hide. Well, you'd gravitate towards the castle because that'd be where you were from.
Yeah, of course.
This is a great film.
So you go, you're King Steve from the olden times.
It's essentially Elf.
Is it Elf? It's sort of Elf, is it?
But no, but in a good way, in a way that people like Elf.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you head to the castle and there's the classic scene of like, "Yes, I think let me through here, please, thank you." And they'll be like, "No, you have to pay to get in." He was like, you know what I mean? Because he'll assume that everything's fine.
"What is this, Jape? Is it April the 1st?
It must be St. Michaelmas's day because everybody is dressed in funny garbs." "Excellent. Let me in."
And then
he'd probably make a friend who was one of those actors. That would be quite helpful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's nice.
There might be a love interest later down the road.
There'd also be a scene quite early on where he comes across a very broad portrayal of two classic sort of comedy American tourists.
Yeah. Yes.
So the wife will have a huge map, the husband will have a huge camera, and he'll be like, "Oh, excellent. I see that the jester has arrived early. Perform your little dance, please."
And he saves the day because evil developers are trying to turn the castle into private luxury flats.
Yes.
And he uses his siege skills.
Yeah.
And it goes a bit home alone at that stage.
Yeah.
And they thwart the developers using ancient, sort of boil them to death and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. One of the few people on earth that he would feel comfortable with would be the Pope.
Mm.
"You know what? It's like a bloody breath of fresh air hanging out with you. It really is."
That's probably quite handy for the post-credit scene, isn't it? Where they're just he's hanging out with the Pope.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, post-credits, they're having pizza together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
what is it? Some sort of flat circular chicken?
The first time he eats a pizza would be good.
A pounded grouse?
So how's the love story sort of panning out?
Despite the fact that our main character is essentially an obscene character, his values are totally skew-whiff and not up to date. He doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
He's quite flatulent.
Yeah.
He's sort of like, you know, he's like a gross medieval.
He will kill a Catholic at the drop of a hat.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Any animal he sees, he thinks is a Spaniard. He sees a dog. There's a Spaniard in the room. There's a Spaniard. But despite all that, Zooey Deschanel playing just a kind of really cool, quirky kind of cool character will just for absolutely no apparent reason, just fall in love with him. And she'll be like, oh, I'm a bit different too. While he's like biting the head off a chicken. So
there'll be a great montage sequence, won't there, where for some reason, you know, Henry VIII or whoever it is has to like have a modern makeover for some reason. It's like, oh, you can't be walking around in those clothes. So then there's like a montage about him going to Westfield, getting his hair cut.
That's right. So he's at the beauty salon, getting his nails done.
Exactly. And they're waxing his beard.
And there's quick cuts of him with like different pairs of trousers, like tight jeans, flared jeans, like disco trousers, just weird comedic trousers.
There'll be a bit where he goes to Burger King and they put one of those cardboard Burger King crowns on his head.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Who is this rival king?
The Burger King. Let's declare war on him.
This is a great move.
That'll be good.
It's good stuff, isn't it?
Come on, Amazon, Christmas 2024.
Yeah. I don't think we even need to discuss the fact that it's Jesse Plemons playing him, but it is. And you know what? You know what's going to happen? Jesse Plemons is going to play him, and then he's going to go for his makeover, and they're going to shave him and do his hair, and we'll see people like rubbing moisturizer on him and stuff and everything. Yeah. When he comes out, he'll be wearing a beautiful suit, and he'll be being played by Timothy Chalamet. We'll literally change casting. So the makeover is underneath the hoary old Plemons.
There's a soft, sweet Chalamet.
So we do fine. We plain Susan it. Yeah, fine. Yeah. Nice. Great.
Chalamet.
Sleek, glossy hair.
Supple, yet firm musculature.
Take me to the Louvre. Slender biceps.
Pure thoroughbred.
Chalamet.
Equine tail.
Shins of alabaster.
Top-end monogrammed luggage.
And the neck strength of a hyena.
Chalamet. He's a luxury prince.
If Amazon are listening, we are willing to do the thing where he goes to every London landmark as part of the film. That's fine. He needs to go up the Shard. He needs to go on the London Eye.
All of these things. Yeah, of course.
You want to see him in a black cab, all that kind of stuff, yeah. He needs to make an emergency call from a red telephone box at some point that's inside a double-decker bus.
Here we go. This is better.
Also, we can do all the tie-ins because he's going to want to visit the Apple store, isn't he? Oh, great. I must visit this Apple store. I love a hearty cox or a tasty...
I'm taking a bite out of a mini iPod. Yeah. Crunch.
Crunch. Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, it's crunchier than a Granny Smith, but I quite like it. I suppose it is a bit late in the year.
Yeah, and does he then beat the developers using a trebuchet?
It'd be nice to see the chief developer being trebucheted deep into the Thames estuary, wouldn't it?
Yes, that'd be good. Yes.
Or it could all get a bit dark at the end where he could do proper medieval hang drawing and torturing of all the...
It gets out of hand. It'd be nice to see a Christmas movie where the baddies, the comeuppance comes, but it gets way out of hand. Fully hung, drawn, and his bollocks are snipped off and boiled in front of him.
Yeah.
His spleen is fed to his favourite wolfhound.
Yeah.
In front of his very eyes. Yeah. His ears are separated from the length of the nation.
In terms of the classification of this film, we've got to hope that whoever's rating it falls asleep before that moment, so we still get the PG. We need that PG.
You've got to get the PG dollars.
Yeah, to make it work financially, we need the PG, but to make it work artistically, we have to have the disemboweling of four or five people in the last scene. And it has to be up close and visceral.
I imagine this film has been made, right? This must have been made.
Well, that's when you know you've got a hit, right? If it's basically already been pre-tested.
I think we can make it work in a kind of elf way.
We don't have to invent, we have to innovate.
I reckon what would happen is the first day, he'd go back into his castle, he'd get in. But you know what would happen is, he'd go to the ticket desk, be like, oh, let me through, please. And they'd say, you need a ticket. And he'd go, ha, 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 ha. And then they'd go, oh, he must be one of the new cast for the acting crew, whatever. And then he'd just be waved through.
He assumes all the tourists are just servants, right?
Yeah.
So he goes straight to his bedchamber, takes a massive dump in front of some Spaniards. who's just there on a day trip.
Yeah.
Throws his pelts over some Dutch tourists and expects them to bath him immediately. And maybe some of them get involved because they think it's interactive.
Well, I think that's going to be the other element of this film, which is he's going to bring new life to this institution. You know what I mean? It was getting a bit tired.
And suddenly it's a smash hit because they're this amazing performer.
Exactly, because actually they're enjoying his regal, his good regal values. I don't know what we're really saying. His good medieval regal values. A good feudal attitude to society is what we actually need.
Henry, I think you're right. If we were to write this, the key thing is what does he learn from the modern day? And what do we, the modern day, learn from him?
And we learn that the feudal system did work in some ways, actually.
Yeah.
If you think about it. They did get a lot done now and again.
I think what we'll learn is, in the final scene where he basically punches King Charles to death and becomes the new de facto King of England.
Yeah.
But this time with full constitutional powers restored, full...
Yeah.
Medieval powers.
Full medieval powers. I think what it'll be about is he learns that there isn't a feudal system anymore and you have to make it on your own these days. But because he has royal blood, he therefore is the best person in the country. So he goes to the top anyway.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Because he's touched by God. Yeah.
He's touched by God. So it's about royal blood. That's what this... Okay. Which is why, and I think we've just got ourselves a title, my friends.
Royal blood.
The new smash it.
Royal blood. A family Christmas movie.
The new smash it. Pro-monarchist. Really violent. Family fun. Smash of the summer / winter.
Sanguine Regina.
Reintroducing Mel Gibson as the chief beef eater.
Yeah. Who will give in the end the post-show credits... We'll give a 2-hour lecture on divine selection, right?
But hey, one aspect of the film we didn't work out. How the hell is this king of medieval England travelled into the future, for God's sake?
Comet.
There you go. Done. Move on. Right. Okay. So now we need to talk about lighting. How are we going to light this baby?
Clemens has just asked for a sixth Winnebago. That's a sixth Winnebago.
In which to house his fifth Winnebago.
He wants Winnebago. He wants Russian Winnebagos. It's Winnebagos within Winnebago. Clemens' word is as the word of the Lord, is the first rule of this film. If we're going to make this work.
Well, if any Hollywood studios are listening, I think we're open to chats.
We're open to cash as well.
Yeah.
I think we probably need to work on the name of the film. I think Royal Blood isn't necessarily what's going to get us over the line. I'm going for Tower of Fundon.
Oh, that's quite good.
I see this as being our first creative disagreement, actually. I think I'm quite keen on Royal Blood. So it may be that we have to separate and create two rival films. You know, like when there was two Robin Hood films the same year. Might have to be like
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Or when they did two of those White House Down things at the same time. Yeah. Yeah.
Or Armageddon and Deep Impact came out in the same year.
Exactly. It's just a phenomenon.
Well, I'll see you at the box office, Henry.
Yeah, see you at the box office.
Unlucky, Henry, I've already secured Clemens.
No! Oh, I was wondering it's what the deal breaker.
That means you've got Crow, Henry.
I've got bloody Crow. I'll only be in the film if we call them crows, not ravens. I'm not going to support a bird that's a rival to my surname. It's not going to happen, mate. The fucking crows, all right?
Time to hear your emails, and instead of playing the email jingle that I made, we're going to play a version sent in by one of you. And this is from Peter from Germany.
Oh, lovely. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
And he has sent in a version of the email jingle reinterpreted as plain chant.
Ooh.
Here we go.
When you said that we you must hear. You said that we may
And the Oscar for film composer goes to, for Royal Blood, it's Peter from Germany.
That was outstanding.
That was absolutely amazing. I was picturing, you know, we've got ourselves a composer for this movie, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You know, I was picturing, you know, those computer game ads they do for things like Halo.
Yeah.
It's always music like that, very, very eerie, like, oh, and you're seeing utter carnage
yes.
on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's always like, and a futuristic guy's blasting aliens. That is the last sequence of the film for me, is that music. So it's,
yeah.
And it's our character going absolutely ballistic with crossbows, killing everyone, eviscerating them, like lassoing people with viscera and just covered in just, he's developed a kind of gun that's like a mixture between a machine gun and a crossbow, which fires crossbows at people.
Yes.
And during it, Zooey Deschanel is lancing the boils on his face because she's lancing boils on him throughout the whole movie because he's got so many medieval boils on him.
That was fantastic.
That was amazing.
Thank you, Peter. Oscar Zagnit.
We've had an email from Fran.
Hello, Fran.
Now, this is an old thread. She has heard our theme tune, the Three Beans Sound theme tune, within a piece of classical music.
Oh, God.
Now, I can't work out if this is the same one that... So I don't think it is. Someone else sent in a piece of classical music and said that it sounded like our theme tune. I think this is a whole different one. So my plagiarism now knows no bounds. Fran has found the theme hidden in Schubert's Impromptu Opus 90, number 4 in A-flat major.
Doesn't sound that impromptu.
Okay, Schubert's been dead for 200 years, so he's not going
to
sue.
I'm just going to throw something together in A-flat major. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'll just throw it together and someone else write it down. It's all fine.
Hang on, it's Schubert. What's the other one?
Schubert. And then months ago or years ago, we had someone else saying they'd found it in a different piece, but I can't remember what it was. We've actually had a few over the years.
I think if it's been found in at least three places, that suggests that you are tapping into something primordial. Do you know what I mean? There's some basic, some unifying musical motif.
Do you think it's possible that if we went back in time machine, you'd see a Neanderthal man at the top of a hill screaming,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly, through a bone flute.
Before being run through with a spear by Harrison Ford.
The saber-toothed tiger. Yeah. Or that, yeah. Either, or both.
Anyway, Fran has recorded herself playing the Schubert music on her own piano. So hang on, I think it's coming home a bit. Here we go.
Oh,
is it a waltz?
It is.
Well, this is amazing. So Schubert has done a version of our theme tune. That's brilliant.
I think it's possible. First of all, amazing playing, Fran. Very good. Love that. Hats off to you.
Absolutely.
Secondly, is this evidence that Schubert has gone forward in time or is from the future, is from the current day and he went back in time?
I think it's another film. But this time it's Ben, it's the sequel. This time Ben's been transported back in time and wakes up in Schubert's body. I hope you've got something prepared for the big concert tonight, Schubert.
Just something impromptu would be fine.
Something impromptu would be ideal. And Ben's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I've only got one tune in me.
Ben has even been commissioned by his ancient Prussian ancestors as well. So all the characters are played by Ben Partridge in this film because they all...
All of them are played by Ben Partridge.
Because they're all his ancestors. Apart from Schubert, who, of course, is played by...
Jesse Plemons.
Thank you. Jesse Plemons.
Thank you.
And then he has a shower and he's played by Chalamet. We do the same. We do the same on double casting. So he wakes up in bed all hungover with his cockerel alarm clock next to him. Smacks it on the head.
Full Plemons.
Here we go, another day, it's a bloody office. full Plemons for that scene. Another bloody day, it's a bloody office. Then... yeah, goes and has a shower, gets all made up, has a wig put on, and the little beauty spot that they all had in those days, yeah, covered in powder, yeah, and stuff. And then it, obviously Chalamet comes out.
This is an email from Sage.
Hello, Sage.
Dear Beans, a few weeks ago, you had an email from a listener who was introduced to the podcast by a romantic interest who they later went on to marry.
Yes.
Like them, the Maps episode was my first episode, and I liked it so much that I went back and listened from the beginning right away. A little less than a week later, I met someone who'd become my long-term partner. However, rather than getting married, we recently broke up.
Oh.
But
oh,
he is still paying for my Three Bean Salad Patreon subscription. So who's the real winner here?
Oh, golly.
We shouldn't announce this, Ben, because they'll cancel it. Don't let them know.
Golly, Sage. Sorry to hear it.
We've had an email from Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hello, Ruth.
Dear Beans, I like to weave while listening to podcasts.
Brilliant. Very fitting in with a sort of time-travelling vibe.
It's quite an ancient skill, isn't it, weaving?
She could certainly be an extra in the movie.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
How glad I was to settle down this afternoon to weave along to your brand new episode of Three Bean Salad. And how amused I was during the episode to hear Mike sternly command, "Do your weaving." I think that might be me. But
I mean, I think it was you, yes. Yeah.
Who are you talking to?
I was talking to an imaginary child from the medieval German era.
She actually was weaving.
Yes, I am. I chuckled to myself. I am doing my weaving. Then your email section began and things took a dark turn.
Oh.
You revealed to your correspondent Ruth that she's in fact a bean wisp, a conjured figment of the bean gestalt.
Mm-hmm.
My blood ran cold. For my name is Ruth. I am, or until this afternoon, believe myself to be the daughter of a woman and a man called Jeffrey. I understand now that I too must be a bean wisp.
They're not both called Jeffrey, are they?
No. That's what she's saying, yeah.
A woman and a man called Jeffrey.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine.
Yeah.
I have questions. Cool. Are all bean wisps called Ruth? Are all Ruths bean wisps? As my/our creators, we look to you for answers. Yours wisply, Ruth.
I don't think it's the place of the createe to look for answers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There is an answer, but we're not going to say what it is.
Exactly. You just do your weaving.
If you are, for example, weaving, and then we are talking about weaving, that's because you are a bean wisp. There's no...
Yeah, I'm afraid so. No way that's around that. Pretty, that's a very clear-cut case.
For example, if you listen to this week's episode and you are a medieval king who's time-travelled to the modern era,
mm-hmm,
that's because you're a bean wisp.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. By the way, would it be quite good for our film for it to have a framing device, which is that Ruth is weaving the film, the story, sort of like...
Oh, like it's a tapestry.
Yeah, so she's weaving the story, exactly. So should we start with her sitting next to an armchair?
Not in the armchair?
No. She's next to an armchair.
Well, hang on, if we're doing that, do we need to do the thing like they're doing? Is it Goodfellas and loads of other films where they start, the opening scene is about three quarters of the way through the story? So she's weaving,
yes,
weaving an explosion with the main character, who looks like they're being weaved into a car bomb, and then you go back.
She's weaving the king, who's on a Boris bike with a bazooka.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
and then so she goes back to the beginning. Then I'll weave you a tale, and yes, then she weaves it through to the present. We catch up. Yeah, and then we get the last act of the film where does she have to weave all that really gross last scene? But you know, I think what could happen at the end. The police are trying to arrest the king.
Mm.
And like, unfortunately, we want to arrest him, but the trouble is we haven't got any blimmin' evidence. It'll never hold up in court. And then she's like, "No, but I've woven everything." And it's like, the weavings, we can use the weavings. Because she's woven the whole story. The weavings are the proof.
But you can't take a king to court, can you? Because it's the crown versus...
That's the double twist. The crown versus the crown.
He's always ready. He's always ready with a counter argument.
Philip emails.
Hello, Philip.
Dear Beans, I was visiting my parents in Bremen for Christmas, and Mother heard me listening to you. She's an avid cruise enjoyer.
Mm.
And having looked up the podcast, asked me if I'd heard the recent episode Cruises. I said I had, and suggested that she try it out.
Oh.
On the drive to the airport today, I put the episode on for her in the car.
It's a really gross episode. It's not one for mothers.
She then heard three men who had never been on a cruise talk about piss for about half an hour.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
There was a good bit about how the passengers never eat in port because they paid for food on board. Then it went back to a bit about how the captain might take you on a blue flume at a point and it's so encrusted with piss and shit that you can't even tell it's blue.
Oh, sorry about that.
What does he want from us? What's he doing? Sticking this on in front of his mother?
I know.
Come on, Philip.
Don't put it on in front of you.
Come on, mate. This is basic.
I did try to explain your podcast isn't usually that gross. However, I believe the damage has been done.
It is sometimes. And it's always the one that a mother, and quite often my mother, will listen to. Or someone else's mother. I think whenever a mother listens to it, it's always one of the gross ones. That's the way the world works, I'm afraid. I mean, is it time that we rebadge ourselves the Turd Brigade? Because it won't take that much work on the logo, frankly. The Turd Brothers.
Oh, poor Philip's mother.
Yeah, poor Philip's mother.
Apologies.
Anna emails, Dear Beans, I'm writing this having just returned from the British Overseas Territory of South Georgia in the Southern Ocean.
Wow.
Crikey.
Where I was based for 14 months. We had a pretty appalling internet for the duration, but I would try any means possible to get new episodes of The Beans. Finding a quiet spot to enjoy the episodes with my resident penguin friend.
Nice.
Wow. Is that like Antarctic? Is it?
Yeah.
Is yeah.
Really far.
That's like in the Sandwich Islands, isn't it?
Blimey. She must have loved her episode on the Antarctic then.
Or hated it.
Or really hated it. You know, like that's that rule with the Christmas presents where if someone's into boats, don't get them a book about boats or a small replica of a boat.
Yeah.
Because they'll be like, I'm a boat person, you prick. I know about these boats. This is just basic boat bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You never do that. So you don't send an Antarctic expert or resident towards the Antarctic podcast episode.
A stuffed penguin.
Exactly. You didn't send them a stuffed penguin for Christmas because they've already got like 10 stuffed penguins.
I was especially delighted for the potential future tour of the Beans to remote Atlantic Islands. The government of South Georgia, brackets, and the South Sandwich Islands have a permanent presence on the island, and I know they would be absolutely thrilled to host a show, perhaps in an abandoned whaling station.
Nice.
Why abandoned?
Yeah, good point. Why are we going to the abandoned?
Let's go for a working one.
Live podcast show featuring live hauling in of sperm whale.
Hear the blubber cranes.
They certainly put up with me rabbiting on about the podcast admirably well, not even questioning my slightly bizarre responses of America anytime the USA was mentioned, or singing the Kerrigan's Mustard theme song every time I was cleaning up the dinner time condiments.
That's amazing.
This is very cool.
Just at the end of my season, while overlapping with the incoming team, I had the absolute pleasure of discovering a fellow Beans listener.
What?
Brackets, potentially a fairly rare occurrence in an island community of 18 people. That's not bad, is it?
We've got quite a few kind of polar scientists happening then.
We've got like both poles covered now.
At the moment, yeah. This is very exciting.
So where other podcasts, you know, your Shag Married Annoyed, your Peter Crouches, you know, they try and build an audience in, you know, big population centres, London, Manchester.
Places with arenas.
We're doing it the other way.
Yeah.
That's right.
Tiny, remote island communities. We're aiming mostly for territories that Argentina has a continuing claim upon. Yes, that's what we're doing.
Our market share is exactly the same.
Well, yeah, because 2 out of 18 people is what?
That's massive. And generally places where there isn't a strong night-day distinction that would be recognised by most humans.
Yeah, the less survivable, the better.
So what we want now is equator denizens.
Oh, so we can start filling in. Yeah.
We've done the top of the bottom. Okay. Let's go from the middle now. Anyone equatorial? Anyone who's really close to the equator, can they get in touch, please?
In fact, can we see a photo of you listening on the equator?
We'll settle for someone who's cast away on the Galapagos, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
Definitely take that. That could be another area that we could try and dominate, get a large market share in. Wouldn't it, the Galapagos?
So Anna writes, shout out to Bodil in the museum. I think Bodil is the other Three Bean Side listener.
Okay.
So hang on, there's 18 Bodil. People on this island and there's a museum.
Blimey. Sounds like my kind of place.
Anyway, hi Bodil. So thanks very much, Beans, for brightening my days when it was interminably dark and snowy. And please do feel free to publicise a South Georgia special Pompidou discount. If any of your listeners should ever manage to visit the Larson House Cafe at King Edward Point.
Brilliant.
So you'll get a discount, but it will cost you about £75,000 to charter a plane there.
Yeah.
Please see attached a picture of the base and a picture of my penguin friend.
Oh, liking the penguin friend very much.
Very cute penguin friend.
Oh, this is amazing.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
I'd love to go there. We've got to go to one of these places somehow. Am I going to be the one that... is anyone going to say that... Is it going to have to be me that says that that looks a bit like it's just a slightly fat sparrow? Or... No?
Can't believe you're slagging off a penguin.
That's a post-Christmas sparrow. That's a sparrow that's enjoyed the festive period, clearly.
Well, whoever it is, they're doing pretty well out there. They've survived.
Yeah, they've survived. No, it's a very, very, very cute, fluffy bird
that we're led to believe is a penguin.
If you want to believe it's a penguin, go for it. Enjoy. That is not a penguin, my friend.
we'll share the penguin image on our social media, and the listener can decide if they think that's a penguin.
Or is it a very young penguin? That's maybe what it is, isn't it?
It does look like a baby penguin, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't look that alive.
I'm going to say it does look a bit like
a dead frozen sparrow.
It looks a bit like a dead frozen sparrow. It does look a bit like a dead frozen sparrow. In fact, I'm now slightly thinking of retracting my desire to visit this place. I've got a feeling if we all visited, it would all be like, come meet all our penguins. And it would all be a bit sinister because there'll be loads of dead sparrows.
And the scientists are all just dead sparrows as well.
Everyone's dead sparrows.
Apart from Anna.
Who's an alive sparrow.
Well, thank you, Anna. It's always great to hear from the extremes.
Thanks, Anna. Those are amazing photos.
And please, if anyone wants to email in, you don't have to be at one of the extreme corners of the Earth. You could be anywhere. You could be
anywhere you are at is essentially a pole of the Earth if it was spinning from that axis. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. It's just a point on the Earth. It just so happens to spin from the North and South poles. Thereby, the grace of God. You know, who are we to say that any cosmic event could probably readjust, you know, our axis spinning or whatever. Do you mean everywhere is a pole? The Earth is a sphere, isn't it? So
it's not a perfect sphere, though.
No, it's not a perfect sphere. Certainly not with this government.
Oh, God. Yes, so if you want to email us, the email address is 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Patreon.com/3beansalad is the place to go. You can get our bonus episode. We record much more than we put out in these episodes, and that ends up in a bonus episode every month. You can also get ad-free episodes. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Well, I wouldn't have missed it, would I? Because it's the old...
Was it Pike Rugby night?
It was Pike. It was Pike Rugby. Thank you, Penn. And here's my report.
It was Pike Rugby last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Dan Cook won the toss, folded himself into a jackknife position, was placed within the belly of a recently gutted 53-pound freshwater muscle lunge, which was skewered through with a 9-foot medieval thrusting spear before being placed atop England's highest mountain, at which point the game was able to commence. Chester Van Purem suggested next time someone ought to bring a whistle and was immediately sin-binned. CYMK hoofed a fish bladder over the ledge for an early 3 points, but there was no time to celebrate as Jacqueline Musson scored a double try from the 9-yard line with a dorsal anus. That would have been converted by Rob Larocque were he not fenestrated by a Macedonian phalanx commanded by Servas Tilkin. Sam Lander took a poke up the left wing from a pike that had been left unattended in the charge for horse position by Rob Briscoe, who was supposed to go and get halftime oranges but came back with a bag of pickled water voles. In the second half, Sophie Elliott kebabbed a 12-man maul, only to have the caudal udder intercepted by Rhys Prithock, who went on to fall foul of Nicole Hansen's illegal halberd. Kit Malone took the penalty and rejected the usual kick at goal, instead opting to sashimi Jason Crane. Before we knew it, we were already into injury time. Names were drawn out of a pissine stink sack, and Stephen Seward was selected to be injured. Grace Moore volunteered to take up the frozen maiming pike, dedicated her first swing to Michael, and pounded Stephen deep into the ground at the 20-yard line up to, but not beyond, the eyebrows, allowing him the honour of being a kicking tee in next year's game. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. This one's great. I mean, they're all great, but this one's great. This is from Jonathan in New Hampshire.
Live free or die!
Yes. He says, as an active composer and music professor, I've been thinking for some time about what I might do for a version of the theme song. I finally figured it out today, and I've attached the result. A spoken word version of the theme that firmly establishes it as the ultimate summation of almost four centuries of European musical structural thought.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it? We've learned through the Schubert thing. Sounds great.
Thank you.
We'll play that in a second. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Cheerio.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Major tonic triad arpeggiated. Major subdominant triad arpeggiated. Major dominant triad arpeggiated. Ascent to third of tonic triad. Imperfect authentic cadence. Major tonic triad arpeggiated. Major subdominant triad arpeggiated. Major dominant triad arpeggiated. Descent to root of tonic triad. Perfect authentic cadence. Parallel symmetrical period.
Can I say, that absolutely kills the dance floor, that.
That's what we call Benjamin music.
It's absolutely straight from the barely beating ice-cold heart of Benjamin.
I prefer it.
That was terrific. Thank you.
That was amazing. Thank you.